I think it bears mentioning today, after we sing, "For Those Tears I Died," those that are new to us or newer to anything MCC may not be aware the writer of that song, Marcia Stevens, wrote it when she was in high school, about 15 or 16 years old. She was singing with Children of the Day during the Jesus movement of the 70s. And it was later that she came out as a lesbian woman. Marcia Stevens, the identified grandmother of contemporary Christian music, is a born-again lesbian and one of the treasures of MCC. So it is very fitting that we sing "For Those Tears I Died" on this Sunday. Please pray with me. God, may the words of my mouth and the meditations of all of our hearts be a delight in your sight. God, you who are our rock, our strength, and our redeemer. Amen. On these anniversary Sundays, it's always fun and sometimes gives us pause to think where we may have been. So, can you recall where you were or what you might have been doing 45 years ago today? Now, I have heard tell that long-term memory is the one that remains, and the short-term memory is what is lost. So, for some, you were not even a glimmer in your parents' eyes yet, and for even others here, your parents weren't glimmers in their parents' eyes 45 years ago. When I think about that, I recall that 45 years ago, I was in the first grade. You do the math. I also recall that in the first grade, I had a huge crush on Brian Harkless. And when he invited me to his birthday party, we were on the playground at school, and I was so thrilled, I hugged him and gave him a kiss on the cheek. When he recoiled, it was one of my first lessons in how I was not supposed to show love and affection for another man. A lesson that took a long time to unlearn. 45 years ago. 45 years ago this day, another Sunday, a small group gathered for worship in the living room of the house in Huntington Park, California, where Troy Perry and Willie Smith shared a home. It was a time at which people were still routinely arrested for being gay, and their lives were ruined if they were discovered to be gay. Troy Perry had run an ad in the Advocate magazine and published his home phone number and his home address, inviting people to come to his house for a worship service. 12 people showed up at that pink house in Huntington Park. You cannot make up that story. And among those 12 were not just gays and lesbians or Christians. There was a straight couple at that first gathering. There were 2 Jewish people who attended the first MCC worship service. They sang hymns accompanied by a recording of the Mormon Tabernacle Choir. I prefer our choir and band, thank you very much. Troy preached, and they shared communion. He kind of made it up as he went along. They shared communion with a prayer of blessing, which has become the tradition in most MCCs around the world, as we even practice it here. And that Sunday, 45 years ago today, something new was born in Christendom. A time when no church of any tradition welcomed, as it would have been said at that time, the, quote, homosexual community. A church was born that welcomed gay, lesbian, bi, trans folks exactly as they authentically were, with no apology and with no hidden agenda. 45 years ago today, October 6th, our MCC denomination and movement, of which we are one member congregation, was born. So many things. We know so many things are different 45 years later. But 45 years ago, there was no cell phone. There was no internet. Can you imagine? 1968 was before the Stonewall riots. It was long before same-sex marriage or even civil unions were available in any nation or any state. Homosexuality was still a crime. It was still a diagnosable mental illness. And the few places where gays or lesbians could openly gather, well, not even openly gather, could gather at all, were under constant threat of police raids and public humiliation. Decades before, we had Will and Grace and Ellen and Queer Eye for the Straight Guy, before a gay couple raising a child could ever have been called anything like the new normal. So much has changed. From that first small gathering, MCC is now a movement of about 300 churches in more than 30 countries around the world, approximately 40,000 members. All of those numbers depend upon who's counting and when. But we are global, but we're not large. So kind of like the salt of the earth, kind of like the leaven in the loaf, that little bit of MCC has changed the face of the church and the world. A lot has changed, but even still today, 45 years later, we are the largest Christian organization that globally communicates a progressive view of homosexuality and Christianity. Pause and think about that. 45 years later, tiny MCC, still the largest globally to distribute that message. If the story of MCC tells us something, it is how one person saying yes to God can make a difference. Our current moderator, Reverend Dr. Nancy Wilson, has often said she believes that God called many people over and over again to start a church that ministered to the unreached LGBTQ community. She believes God called many over and again. And it was Troy Perry who was the one who said yes. We know a lot has changed, but sadly not everything, lest we forget that even in our progressive Portland, a simple message that one can be gay and Christian still is a new and life-saving message for many. In those places in the world, imagine it, it may feel like old news to us, but in places in the world where it is dangerous to be LGBTQ, like Nigeria, Jamaica, Pakistan, Eastern Europe, places where MCC is, it's still good news. Even here in North America and in the progressive Northwest, there are too many churches that still raise gay, lesbian, bi, trans children to hate themselves and to believe that the Bible is toxic to their very being. Or they might still operate under a church policy of don't ask, don't tell. The work, even that simple work, begun 45 years ago, is not done. But Troy and 12 others said yes, and things began to change forever. It was a message that was perfect for its time. And yes, 45 years later, times have changed. With more and more open and affirming churches, particularly in North America, and we know here in the greater Portland area, MCC is not the only game in town. If you want to worship openly as a gay, lesbian, bi, or trans person, if you want to be part of a church, and we wonder and we question and we deliberate throughout MCC and even in MCC Portland, knowing that in 2013, being, quote, the gay church isn't enough anymore, as if that was really ever enough in 2003 or 1993. And we wonder sometimes, not quite knowing what is it that God calls us to be in this time, in this place, for such a time as this. For such a time as this. That's the memorable message of Mordecai to his niece, Esther. If you are unfamiliar with it, the colorful short story in the Hebrew Bible, the book of Esther, is set during a time of Persian rule when there were Jews who had remained in the Persian Empire, and they were experiencing in that empire a period of extreme discrimination and persecution. In short, the Persian king had become displeased with his current queen, and through what can only be called an ancient beauty pageant, whereby they were trying to select the most beautiful woman in the empire, a young and beautiful Jewish girl named Hadassah, Esther's Hebrew name, Hadassah, wins the beauty pageant and is selected as the new queen. However, her Jewish identity remains hidden, even as the persecution increases. News of an impending plot to virtually exterminate the Jewish population in the Persian Empire comes to knowledge, and the uncle who raised Esther, Mordecai, sends a message to the now queen of Persia, Esther. The message that we hear today: do not think that your royal position will protect you. If you don't do something, your family will perish, and God will raise up deliverance from somewhere else. Who knows? Maybe being who you are, where you are, in the position in which you find yourself. Who knows? But for such a time as this. Beauty treatments, eunuchs scurrying about the palace, gossiping at every turn, true identities hidden and then revealed. Esther may just be the gayest book of the Bible. Oh, that one didn't work. But the story of Esther leaves us little doubt that it was because of who she was and where she was for exactly that moment, it was for God's saving purposes, for such a time as this. So for such a time as this, it's not 1968 Los Angeles, nor is it 1976 Portland when MCC Portland was founded as a congregation, nor is it 1985 or 2005 for that matter. It is 2013. For such a time as this, to what is God calling us, MCC Portland? I think Esther is instructive because just as she could not hide her Jewishness and be what God was calling her to be, we cannot hide our MCC-ness. God's saving action was brought about because she named and claimed her identity. In that moment, it was important that she was Jewish and not Persian and not Ethiopian and not Egyptian, but Jewish in order to be used by God. We have to be MCC, not just a queer friendly version of a church of somebody else's stripe or color. We have to be MCC in order to be used by God for such a time as this. But we puzzle about what on earth would that look like. I am not a promoter of denominationalism, but I do believe in 2013 it serves us well to consider how is it we may be the same, but also how is it we may be different even still from other churches. Why on earth would someone come to MCC Portland in 2013. So I've been thinking about DNA. Not a scientist, But if you remember DNA, those are the strands of nucleotides that carry it. Thank heavens for Wikipedia. They are those strands of nucleotides that carry the genetic code. It's the blueprint that we should all recall. It's the blueprint that is embedded in every cell of every organism. It determines that pattern of characteristics that actually makes it possible to identify one organism from another organism. I recall I have a dear friend, and she was raised in a family with her biological mother, a non-biological father, and siblings by the non-biological father and her mother. So early on, she noticed similarities, but she also noticed a lot of differences between her and her other siblings. And she learned early that this was not the biological father of hers, but it was of her siblings. And it wasn't until well into her adulthood that she met her biological father and siblings, other siblings of that same father. And she was surprised by what she noticed. There were physical similarities, yes, but there were gestures and laughs, even the way she sneezed and scratched her nose differently than her other siblings was just like her biological father. It was very peculiar. There was something about that DNA that was embedded in her that carried on a similarity. My family, the Meckleys, are peculiar in many respects, as I think probably everyone would say about their own family. But one of the peculiarities is that I have a set of double cousins, which means that my mother and her sister married my father and his brother. So two sisters married two brothers. Actually, my parents met at my uncle and aunt's wedding. Isn't that adorable? That's really adorable. But that means that my first cousins are as genetically close as we can be without actually sharing the same set of parents. So when you got all of us together, our cousins and us, you knew that there was some kind of, there was this little unique mix of the Meckley and Pugh genetics that showed through all of us. But there was also a difference between my sisters and I and my cousins. When we grew up, we never looked that strongly like either of our parents. I mean, if you looked at some of the details, you could tell. But growing up, we all looked very much like one another. You could never mistake that we were not sisters and brothers. Sometimes we were even mistaken as twins at certain points, twins or triplets at certain points of our growing up. You could tell by looking at us that we were related. And it wasn't just the surname. A little bit through nurture, but a lot through the DNA, we were recognizable. So what in MCC's DNA would make it recognizable? How would you be able to tell it from some other church? We're like a lot of other churches, more and more like a lot of other churches. Thankfully, because many are welcoming LGBTQ people. That is something for which we should be truly grateful. But we're still different from, by virtue of our birth, even though it's no longer enough to be, quote, the gay church. There is something deeper, something bigger that is a unique gift of our birth. Our MCC giftedness for such a time as this. So that was, once again, a really long introduction to a very short 3-point sermon. So after 30 years in MCC, after being deeply involved in 7 MCC congregations as a member or a pastor, serving as an MCC denominational employee for 11 years, being a pastor for 10 years, I want to take a stab at sharing what I think our DNA is as MCC. 3 things. First, we are Big Tent Christian. We are Big Tent Christian. Now, some of us have come from traditions or churches that taught us that the Christian message was only one thing, that the good news was exactly this, and you had to tick off certain dogmatic doctrines, that there was a formula, a code, a belief system, that if you followed these rules or believed these certain things, you're in. If you don't, you're out. Because from the very start, MCC drew people from every conceivable background, we have always had an openness to more than one way of being authentically Christian. Authentically Christian. Not less than the other way, and we tolerate you being Christian that way in our midst. A variety of theologies, and that can be troublesome for some because it feels ill-defined, but it allows for freedom and exploration that is still hard to find in a lot of Christian churches. So, big tent Christian. If you're not comfortable with being a big tent Christian, you will probably be uncomfortable in an MCC. Second, we have a unique sensitivity and outreach to the marginalized because we were born for and within people who were marginalized and excluded at the time of our founding. That means that even if the margins of who's in and who's out might move over time, our DNA helps us recognize that we will always know what it feels like to be excluded and marginalized. Therefore, we will always necessarily invite and welcome those who experience exclusion. So if you're not comfortable being around marginal people, you will not be comfortable in an MCC. Third, we have a fully embodied and incarnational faith. You know, MCC, when it said 45 years ago that you can be gay and Christian at the same time, it was bold, but it wasn't simple. And that is something that was proclaimed and something that we and the rest of Christendom have barely caught up with. Not only do we affirm that the full range of diverse human sexual orientations and gender identities are God-given gifts, which we do by saying you can be gay and Christian means God has given you the gift of being gay. That's rooted in a bigger affirmation that isn't just about sexuality. It includes our sexuality, but it's about being in a body. It's a holy gift, and it's not something to be repressed and denied, but a fruitful path for spiritual knowledge and growth. So, if you're uncomfortable with frank discussions or expressions of human sexuality and bodily nature, you will be uncomfortable in an MCC. And those are the things that we were born with by being born who we were 45 years ago. It is our answer to being called to such a time as this with the gifts of who MCC still is, which is far bigger than any surname or shorthand that can be applied. Answering the call for such a time as this means that what began 45 years ago in the living room of a little pink house to the soundtrack of the Mormon Tabernacle Choir, what has happened here since 1977 on the corner of 24th and Broadway in the filtered light of lovely stained glass, being who we are, being MCC, means that by being, we will continue to touch lives and change the world.